Welcome to The Whole View. I'm Stacey Toth of RealEverything.com. I'm all about loving the skin you're in and being healthy inside and out.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Ballantyne of ThePaleoMom.com. I believe that scientific literacy is the key to improving public health.
Welcome back to The Whole View, episode 433. Hi, Sarah. How are you? I feel like we haven't started the show that way in a long time.
I know. It's been a while. I'm well. I woke up to, so when it snows, and I'm using air quotes around snow in Atlanta, it's very exciting. So it snowed yesterday evening and overnight, and I should have taken a picture for you because the snow that was on the ground this morning was like a tiny, it's like six little flakes around on like a couple of leaves, you know, like it was only things that could get cold that there could be anything left. So, anybody who lives anywhere where it normally snows would not even look at that. It's like, oh, well that's, you know, a tiny bit of frost, right? It's like six flakes. I am like six snowflakes. And yet, because we don't get very much snow in Atlanta, super exciting, super, it's like crazy. It's like, oh my gosh, I can touch a snowflake with the tip of my finger. That's how much snow there is. And then it's gone. It's literally, it's like nothing. It's dusty. But there's something
What's sad about this is that you've gotten more snow than Northern Virginia. No, technically we're still a Southern state, but the Northern Virginia is actually like in the north, right? It's like the DC, parallel to DC, and we get real winters. We didn't have snow last year. You got snow, and now you're getting what we call a dusting.
Oh no, this definitely is not enough to qualify as a dusting. I'm telling you, this is less than a dusting. It's still really exciting.
Well, you're from Canada. I guess you know about snow. Atlanta people would call that a dusting.
Hang on. Let's bust all the myths right now. Hang on, because I come from the west coast of Canada, which actually has very similar winters to Atlanta, where you don't get snow every year. When you do get snow, it's like 2 inches of snow and it shuts down the entire city. And it is super, super exciting. So Canada, big country, has regional culture, kind of how America has regional culture, and also has regional weather patterns, also like America has regional weather patterns. So not all of Canada is a frozen wasteland. That's only small areas of it quite far north.
Okay.
All of our Canadian listeners are like super happy right now, and all of our American listeners are. What's the topic?
All right, let's move on to the topic then. I'm excited because we have a couple of questions, and I know we've been doing topics. We've also been got some interesting stuff coming for you in the next couple of weeks that we're excited about. And so to me, I feel like it's been a while since we've kind of gone old school back to listener questions, and I'm excited about it.
I'm really excited about this too. We read all of the questions that come in, and sometimes what we do is we take sort of like a representative topic and we just cover that topic on the show without necessarily having a question to guide it. And then sometimes like this show, I have two questions that came in that I really felt were a similar challenge, but from like opposite sides of the coin. And I thought this was a really great opportunity to just kind of talk about mindset. And I think, especially as we get into the holiday season, the new year, and a holiday season and new year that's different than any of us have ever experienced before because of a global pandemic, this really felt like a really timely conversation to have. So I will start with Ricky's question, who is one of our six male listeners. I am inquiring because I am lost. I have been eating the same foods for well over a year now, and I mean the same. In my mind, that is better than eating non-AIP. I have mild psoriasis, dandruff. I've been constant for over 5 years, and alopecia, not so much anymore, but the bald spots are still there. My inquiry is this. Would it be at all possible for you to create a single ideal day that achieves an optimal level of nutrients, both micro and macro? I mean, a single day's worth of food that has the utmost ideal macronutrient breakdown, you know, I, for example, 2,500 calories, 200 grams of carbs, etc., and more importantly, receives as many and as wide an array of micronutrients as humanly possible in a single day. I am desperate to change this. I know this single element is holding me back. Heck, I've even just bought the AIP cookbook, but because of budgeting and kitchen space, I live at home, I do not have the equipment for a lot of the recipes, for example, a deep fryer, vegetable grinder, and because of my complete unfamiliarity with cooking ingredients and lack of understanding how to attain a level of micronutrients and macronutrients, I absolutely know that I am not eating enough calories for a young male wannabe athlete. I simply resort to eating the same easy-to-prepare and familiar foods and end up in a rut and resort to binge eating or drink. I do not want to be like this, but I don't know where to start.
I have my heart, my hand on my heart for Ricky. First of all, shout out to our six male listener, which I think is like the 40th six male listener.
Yeah, sure.
I hear you. You know what's funny about this question before we kind of like jump into it is this is how Matt feels about food too. Matt says he's waiting for like the perfect product to come out. He jokes about Soylent Green to like be the thing where he doesn't have to think and he can just like consume one thing. And I'm like, are you serious? Like, food is such an experience. Like, we're the opposite sides of the coin, right? Like, I'm like, food is an experience. I love to, you know, explore and like do all these kinds of things. But I think I can understand how all the things that we talk about become overwhelming, you know, the micronutrient and 30 vegetables and 30 varieties of vegetables a week and 8 servings a day and, you know, protein, but not too much and make sure it's seafood and you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, and high quality fats. Like by the time you get a list together of all the things that we're talking about on a sheet of paper, if you're starting, it's overwhelming. So, I love that we're kind of, I know where we're going with how to answer this question, and I'm glad that we're going there. But I also just want to say, like, just flat out, you don't need a deep fryer and a vegetable grinder to be AIP, to focus on healthy eating, to get a variety of nutrients. And I think, I'm hoping that even if just expanding your concept to like a 3-day plan where you like rotate things, we can help get you there. But also, before I forget, I do want to mention we are not medical professionals, nor are we certified nutritionists. And coming up with a plan with a nutritionist would be something that you could work with a professional on. Like if you said to them, mm-hmm. I really want to focus on getting all of these nutrients and these are the activities that I have. I want to make sure I'm getting sufficient calories. Like, can you help me build that? That is what that professional could do. They could also advise you on what they recommend, but they could help build a specific mm-hmm. plan for you.
And to add on that, an AIP certified coach, and we can put the link to the directory, they can work with you online, they can do, you know, Skype calls or other sort of video, Zoom, whatever. And they can even create meal plans for you with recipes that you know, use what's in your kitchen. And they can do it within the AIP framework. So so we'll make sure that a link to the AIP certified coach directory gets put in the show notes. But, you know, that is going to be amazing, amazing expertise. You know, their expertise, and granted, you know, different AIP certified coaches will have different specialties, but like as a general rule of thumb, that their expertise is in helping you implement and getting over these types of ruts. So that's another great sort of great resource to make sure that you're taking advantage of. Ready for the other side of the coin?
Yes.
So this is a question from Jen. First of all, Sarah and Stacy, you continually blow my mind. That was in all caps, so I had to like really emphasize it.
And you could see I'm blushing.
In regards to the information and balanced insights you bring to your podcast, I want to thank you very much for your work. You are accomplishing the change in people's lives by what you teach with the hardcore science. I'm a science nerd too. Every time I listen, I am floored by what I learn. Your podcast deserves the highest praise. Okay, now for brass tacks.
I wonder why you picked her question.
It's a mystery. My inquiry isn't perhaps very specific, but rather has to do with how one goes about implementing nutrition and lifestyle changes to make the transition to better health, better eating habits. In short, my question is this: when and how to make the plunge? I've heard you say there are levels of involvement, from eating more microbiome supporting foods to next level support with supplements. Still, we have in our family, with a son, a potential autoimmune condition looming on the horizon. We aren't there yet, thankfully, but am I a fool not to implement an AIP diet for him? Can we just go ahead and implement it and see what happens? Is it okay to follow AIP even if you don't need to? I like to think I'm capable of doing this protocol by myself or by following your workshop. Does one need to have the added support of a functional physician too? Okay, I realize you're not in the business of giving advice or a course of action to take, but perhaps you have personal perspective from which to speak from. Thanks once again, Jen from Toronto, Canada.
Oh, the Canadians are just the loveliest.
This is really why I had to bust some Canadian myths at the beginning of the show.
Well, I'm excited. I think our listeners can probably understand kind of where we're going with this, which is this idea of having a roadblock or a mentality that it's either all or nothing. And I also want to say, even if you're not doing an autoimmune protocol, because I know both of these questions relate to autoimmune protocol, Sarah and I have heard this question countless times. Mm-hmm. And everyone has someone or something that has the one reason that they can't do all the things. And I, you know, do not let perfection be the enemy of the good in doing the best that you can, as much as you can, and just continuing to make improvements over time. That's been something that we've talked about for a really long time. We did not get where we are today from day one. Sarah did not like kidneys and raw romaine on day one.
I think I was already a fan of the romaine.
Really?
Yeah, no, I seriously really have never liked salad dressing that I can recall. I've always preferred an undressed salad.
Meanwhile, I will have a little bit of lettuce with my dressing and a little bit of cupcake with my icing. Okay, thanks.
But no, I think that is what I see in common about these two questions is this roadblock to progress, you know, and for Ricky, it's sort of being stuck with, you know, I have figured out one way to eat AIP and I can only do it this way. And if I vary from it, then, you know, then I might as well just binge, drink, whatever. And Jen is from the other side of it of, well, I can't even take that first step for my son without knowing how to go all in. And I think it's really important to sort of look at health in general, right? The idea here is lifelong health, right? We tackle this not as a diet of I need to, you know, lose 10 pounds for that wedding, you know, whatever it is, right? We're not looking at short-term goals unless they're iterative goals to serve the long-term, which is, you know, maintaining the best health we possibly can, given our individual circumstances, challenges, genetics, exposures, whatever, for as long as possible. And that comes from a collection of small choices. And so looking at it's not just food choices, it's lifestyle choices, it's self-care choices. It is looking at everything we do in the day as each being a thing that contributes to that ultimate goal of health. And that means that we can break apart a diet overall into a bunch of small choices. Each one, there's a better choice, there's a worse choice, and there's the whole range of gray in between. and we can make as many better choices as we can and feel good about that while we, like, sometimes it's experimenting with the suboptimal choices. Sometimes it's problem solving. Like, how do I implement that better choice in my life? But when we start looking at it as, you know, the idea is to make as many healthy choices, better choices, as we can during the day to serve this long-term goal. And we don't need every single choice to be optimal in order for all of the benefit of all those other good choices that we've made throughout the day to actually be felt and experienced through our entire lives. And so we can look at this positive, here's all the good things I'm doing. That doesn't mean that we ignore the areas where we can, you know, improve and work on something. But rather than thinking of it as the only way to do this is perfect, and if I can't do perfect, I might as well not, think of it as a collection of individual small choices that each can contribute to this lifelong goal of overall health. And when we do that, I generally think that sort of mindset can help get over that roadblock that, you know, I know that you and I have had the experience of that mentality of, I'll start this diet tomorrow, or because I made that bad choice at lunchtime, I might as well eat whatever I want for the rest of the day. I mean, I super struggled with this same mentality for years and years and years before finding, first of all, discovering food sensitivities, and then having to find a better sort of mental health perspective and a better relationship with food as part of that health journey. But yeah, I definitely want to say I resonate with this roadblock as well.
I think what's been interesting for me is I've talked about, you know, how much I've really focused on learning more about diet culture and intuitive eating and body neutrality, which might all be really ridiculous foreign words to you, over the past really like 18 months, coming from disordered eating and a lifetime of diet culture, I didn't see those things. And I think that's what's really interesting to me. Even, you know, we've had moments on the show where I've been like, well, Sarah, you know what I mean? I feel like I am learning, you're learning, we're all kind of learning as we go, because it's so built into our culture and our society to have these badness associated with certain things. Or, you know, we think of ourselves as bad if we eat a bad food. Well, the food didn't, you know, hurt someone. Like, yeah. You know, it's not bad. It's really about focusing on what is best for you. And I think when we focus on the rules and when we focus on limiting ourselves and coming to very narrow box, like, okay, Matt calls it the dogmatic approach to food, right? Like, when we think of the way that we eat almost in a religious sort of way, like, give me the prescribed rules and I will put my blinders on and I will not think about anything else, that can be really detrimental to our emotional health. And then when you decide that you're done with that, either because you achieve whatever the goal is, whether it's weight loss or health, or because you just can't sustain it anymore, people do what I refer to as falling face first into a pizza buffet, because it's been too much for too long. And that yo-yo we've talked about in the show is being so much more harmful than your health than had you just started with small iterative changes from the beginning and just continued to make better choices over time. And so we've seen time and time again in the science and history, how people do not sustain these incredibly finite rules for themselves. And even AIP, we will tell you, Sarah, the expert will tell you, is not intended to be a lifetime sentence if you can heal and start to integrate back. I mean, we talk about transitions mm-hmm. and testing and all that kind of stuff all the time, because the goal is not to permanently restrict all of these things for you. The goal is to get to a place where your body has reduced inflammation and feels better, and then figuring out how to keep it in that state in a way that is mentally healthy for you. And I think about this going back to my 30th birthday. It's funny because I'll be turning 40 this coming year. And I'm like, I've been doing this a long time. but for my 30th birthday, I had been doing, paleo for over a year, and I had lost so much weight, and I wanted to see a certain number on the scale. Like, I just was obsessed with seeing 199. Like, I just, I hadn't been under 200 pounds since I was probably in elementary school. And I was obsessed with it. And so I, not just limited my food, but I justified it by calling it paleo or by calling it intermittent fasting, which really for me was disordered eating to justify skipping meals and eating less food so that I could mm-hmm. get my weight down. And I limited carbs, and I did all these things for so long. It was like a whole month that I saw that number on the scale. But then literally the day that I turned 30 and I went out and I had real food and a cake and whatever, my hormones lost their mind. And I had a huge autoimmune flare, which I didn't realize what it was at the time. And it took almost a month for me to realize what was going on and try to fix it. And I remember, Sarah, you were trying to coach me at the time. And you were like, okay, well, you need to actually do AIP. So I did AIP hardcore. And I did it this way, this obsessive sort of I can't eat anything. I was reading everything. And I remember sitting in the car outside of a 7-Eleven and just sobbing and having a temper tantrum because there was nothing in there that I could eat, because I couldn't have eggs. I couldn't have nuts. I couldn't have the beef jerky because it had nightshade spices on it. And I was like, I can't eat, and the stress of it was causing more harm to my body as well. And so it took me learning to find that balance, to reduce my stress, and to really focus on adding in nutrients from a nutrivore type mindset, to instead of focusing so much on what I couldn't have, to prepare for and think about what I could have, and to really start nourishing my body and thinking about it from that perspective, that allowed me to then understand more over time, intuitive eating, listening to my body, and focusing on health as the ultimate goal, regardless of the number on the scale. So the number on the scale is a lot different for me today, a lot different for me, but that's okay, because I know that I am healthier today than I was then in terms of, my internal health. And I want that perspective for people when you're thinking all or nothing, where is that leading you? Because if all it's going to do is boomerang you somewhere, that is not success.
I had, a similar type of experience. For me, it was leading up to paleo, sort of over the 10 or so years leading up to that. So I was obese as a teenager because of undiagnosed hypothyroidism, and yo-yo dieted throughout my teen years, which meant that every time I came back, the weight would be higher, right? So the maximum would continue to increase every time I would lose weight, and then I would gain more than I lost. So that I was technically morbidly obese by the end of my teen years. And in between undergrad and grad school, I was introduced to a fad version of a low carb diet, and I followed that for about a year and a half and lost 100 pounds. And ignored all of the health issues that were so much worse because of it. That was when I was diagnosed with irritable bowel syndrome. And our Patreon listeners know some of the behind the scenes stories of that I won't reiterate in this much more public forum. But that's also when I had my first diagnosis of an autoimmune condition, That was when I started, you know, looking back, I can basically track grad school in terms of which autoimmune flare I was in. And eventually I had such a bad flare, with adult onset asthma that was so bad that I was coughing up blood, that I was put on super high doses of steroids. And I basically, I went from all, you know, I was, running marathons and following a low carb, super restricted diet to nothing. I was apartment bound. I was out of breath walking, across the bedroom, and it was not a big apartment. And I was on extremely high doses of steroids, which was making me restless and tired and irritable and hungry. And I basically ate my feelings. I gained 50 pounds in the first 6 weeks on 100 milligrams of prednisone a day. And, you know, about 80 pounds over the rest of the year, so that by the time I got married, I was morbidly obese again, which created all kinds of emotional challenges for me, because I wrapped up, I was, you know, in this successful, I lost all the weight, I ran the marathon, you know, like getting my brown belt in karate, like all of these things that to me, I had wrapped up too much worth in. And that meant that when that high physical stress, high nutritional stress in grad school, which is just high psychological stress, all combined to flare my autoimmune conditions and completely erode my health, I spiraled into depression, because all of my self-worth was wrapped up in, you know, my waistline and the activities that I was doing to maintain it. And so I ended up becoming even more overweight than I had been in my teen years throughout my late 20s and early 30s. And it was the experience of having gestational diabetes when I was pregnant with Adele that was, and then realizing that I was type 2 diabetic after she was born, like roughly when she was 1 year old, that it was that experience that brought me back to low carb. And I lost a bunch of weight and all of my conditions flared again. And, you know, and including all of the different skin conditions, the autoimmune skin conditions and the inflammatory skin conditions and migraines and all of the GI symptoms that I experienced and the asthma and the mental health challenges, the anxiety attacks and the depression. And it was, you know, perspective, maybe it was, being just that much older of, and maybe also just trying to keep up with, at that point, you know, two kids, very young kids, that it was that realization of, okay, well, I got my weight back down to the range that I wanted it at following this low carb, very restrictive, hardcore diet. And look at how terrible I feel. Look at how miserable I am. Look at my skin that I'm covering with long sleeves in Atlanta in June. And it was that realization that brought me to paleo, which was, my stepping stone into understanding the science behind nutrition and the science behind lifestyle and viewing health more holistically and viewing health as more than just the number on the scale. And then my stepping stone to the autoimmune protocol and beyond. But it was also, and I sort of want to come back to this point, because our journeys with weight are a little bit different than Ricky and Jen's journeys with autoimmune. For me, that health journey and rooting my choices in a body of knowledge that's derived from scientific evidence, as much as that sort of changed how I viewed food and all of the other choices that I had during the day, there was a huge journey for me in terms of addressing the binge eating disorder that I had had since my teen years, as well as how I view myself and really separating the goal of wanting to be thin from the goal of wanting to be healthy, and really putting health as this forefront pedestal. And then also really starting to look at again, this sort of all or nothing mentality that for me had created these huge, you know, 130, 150 pound fluctuations in my weight over the 15 years leading up to this sort of epiphany type moment where I went, oh, wait, being thin did not make me healthier. And it was the beginning of, you know, I've been on this road now for 9 years, beginning of a long journey of reassessing what matters to me, and then reassessing how do I achieve balance so that that is sustainable. Because I think that the biggest issue with this type of roadblock is that it drives on the wagon, off the wagon, or it is, you know, paralyzes ever getting on the wagon in the first place. And I think that I think that for me, the biggest part of my health journey, honestly, was not the physical health. It was not putting autoimmune diseases into remission. It was not losing all of the weight and keeping it off. It was not, you know, becoming super strong with CrossFit. You know, it wasn't those things. It was the relationship that I have with myself and how I relate to my choices that was the biggest part of my health journey.
I just really want a sound right there. That was, I hope that's the quote this week. I think it's so important. And I would say while our stories are different, almost everybody that I talk to has a story like that. And I think ultimately the answer is, you have to come at this from a place of wanting to love your body, wanting to respect your body, wanting to accept your body and nourishing it. And that is how you will be successful, not in having, you know, some finite set of rules for yourself. And because what that does is you don't listen to your body, and then you have these negative results that Sarah and I are talking about. So hopefully, if we can come at this from the perspective of really just focusing on health, right? When you ask yourself any question about your body or your diet, I think the real question is, are you coming from a place of focusing on health? And if the answer is yes, then okay, let's talk about it. But if the answer is really, well, health because I don't want to be overweight, that's not the answer, right? So making sure that we're really focusing on that. And I think in terms of Ricky's question, the real answer, the problem, the difficulty that we have in answering this question is that it would be very, very, very difficult to prescribe one day's worth of eating with a day that had 30 different varieties of fruits and vegetables.
Yeah.
And multiple types of protein, because we want to make sure that you're getting seafood as well as other healthy fats that we've talked about on the show before, like olive oil, and that we're getting all of the micronutrients that you want in one day. And you've heard Sarah talk about selenium, for example. Eating a handful of Brazil nuts. And I think you said, Sarah, that that gives you your sufficiency for selenium for a week, right? Yeah. So it's like, you don't need to eat Brazil nuts every day. You only need to eat them once a week, for example. Not that we're saying you have to eat Brazil nuts once a week. It's just, that's one way to get the nutrients that you need for selenium, for example. So it's so difficult for us to just say, here's your one day plan. And I know that that would be easier. Listen, Matt would be the first one in line to drink the shake, whatever it is, when it's figured out. But it really can't exist. But we can get to a place where I think there can be a better relationship with food, and that we can have some consistency in the rotation of things that work really well. I know for me, for example, we've been making a mushroom soup, like every other week. And so we have leftovers, and it has been my way to get in I think there's like 5 different varieties of mushrooms that we put in the soup. Mm. And that adds to not just our overall 30 vegetables a week, but also mushrooms are their own food groups, according to Dr. Sarah Valentine.
There are different things. They're not plants.
Well, I think there are different things like that that Ricky can do to kind of set himself up for success. Like make one batch of that and put it in, you know, contain single serve containers in your freezer, whatever. And then you have that once or twice a week. And there you go. You know what I mean? Like, I just think there are opportunities to simplify, I hope.
I think getting into just a little bit more specific, like Ricky's question and Jen's question, and sort of narrowing in on the aspects of their questions that are a little bit more practical and less related to mindset. I think with, you know, the AIP, well, just healthy eating in general, diversity is such an important aspect of a healthy diet, right? So we covered this in our 30 Fruits and Veggies a Week show of, you know, why diversity is so important. And it basically boils down to, you know, diversity of foods equals diversity of nutrients. And especially when we're talking about phytonutrients, the diversity ends up becoming really important in terms of the health benefits that we can get from those nutrients. When it comes to things like essential vitamins and minerals, there's fewer different forms of those things. And so getting enough is the more important aspect with phytonutrients and fiber types. That's where diversity is just so important. And you can actually really achieve a huge amount of nutrient diversity by making similar food swaps, right? So think about a swap of like winter squash for sweet potato, or spinach for lettuce, or an apple for a pear, or a trout or mackerel for salmon, or even turkey for chicken. Like, you could kind of think of those as being interchangeable in a recipe. At the same time, the nutrient profiles are quite different. And then the more, right, you know, now swap out instead of chicken, now swap out for some grass-fed beef, now your nutrient profile is even more different. And so that can be a really great place to start for Ricky, who's like stuck eating the same things every day, is what is a similar food that can be prepared the same way or thrown into the same recipe that can go on that plate that would still be something different. Even just mixing up the variety of lettuce, or getting the rainbow carrots instead of always the orange carrots, even those types of swaps can dramatically increase phytonutrient diversity. In my AIP lecture series, I actually, in the first week, we use an app called Chronometer, although like MyFitnessPal does the same thing. And we do this exercise where I actually have my students do a 3-day food diary with trying not to let journaling change what they're eating. And that is actually really, really tough. There's a lot of science showing that food journaling is one of the best tools that we can have to sort of like making a diet change and sticking with it. And it's because we, as humans, have a habit of making a lot of habitual choices when it comes to food throughout the day. And as soon as you're journaling, it brings attention to the choices that you're making, which then means that you can bring intention to the choices that you're making. And so that activity itself is just really challenging. And it, in part, is some people really need the tool of food journaling in order to affect change. But then what we do is, in the subsequent couple of weeks, is we do a bunch of activities with the data from that food journal. And one of them, I think, would be a really great activity for Ricky to do, which is to basically, the reason why I like Chronometer is because it gives you the ability to look at all of the essential vitamins and minerals, as well as fiber. You can look at, you know, breakdowns of fats, breakdowns of carbohydrates, and you can look at what are you meeting the recommended daily allowance for. And like, we really need to be thinking of the RDA as a minimum, right? Not like you're finished getting that nutrient when you hit the goal, but rather, you know, every single one of those bars needs to be green, which means you hit that nutrient. And on the AAP, there are a couple of nutrients that we need to be really intentional about food sources of those nutrients in order to not fall short. It's pretty easy to fall short. In the AIP lecture series, we always talk about calcium and vitamin E and how we can, you know, what are the food sources of these foods if we're, you know, not eating nuts and seeds, for example, that we can fill this sort of common gap. And so that exercise of, you know, it has the full, all of the foods with the USDA nutrient database is built into the app. And so you can start playing with, okay, like what am I falling short of? Let me find a food that can meet that shortfall. And it ends up being, you know, like finding a puzzle piece when you're putting together a puzzle and you know that, oh, a piece needs to look like this to fit in this spot. It can end up sort of being that kind of troubleshooting. And the reason why I do this as an exercise in the course is because it really helps people stick with their favorite foods, right? Like we all have foods that are their favorites because they're comforting, we love the flavor, they're easy, they fit into our lives, we know what to do with them, right? We don't need to give up the collection of favorite foods, we add variety around those. And so this exercise helps to create a like repertoire of foods or recipes that can fill those gaps in different ways and ends up sort of building out the food diversity while achieving nutrient sufficiency. And so I think that might be a really fun tool. The basic chronometer app that's ad supported is free, I believe still. And so it's just one of those like exercises. I don't personally journal every day. I try to do a 2 or 3 day food journal every couple of months to check in. And what I'm checking in on is my micronutrients. And it just helps, you know, for me to recenter. I also, for me, eating intuitively is very challenging because of having binge eating disorder. I have a tendency to overeat. And so it helps me rein in portion sizes while making sure that I am hitting those micronutrient targets. And so for me, it's like a check-in, like, you know, how am I doing with this? Especially as I've done reintroductions and tried to expand my food variety. So like making sure that these new foods that are making their way back into my diet, that even with this new variety, that I'm still hitting those nutrient targets. And so I think, you know, that particular exercise from the course would be a very useful one for Ricky. And of course, you know, if Ricky's interested, enrollment is now open for the next session of the AIP lecture series, which is going to start Monday, January 18th, 2021. So if any of our listeners are interested, enrollment is now open and you can get more details about the course and everything that it entails on my website.
Awesome. I think for Jen's question, I just want to, while we're, you know, bringing it back to emotions a little bit, and then we'll get back into execution. I also want to say it's so much more difficult when you're a parent doing this for one of your kids. Yeah. We talked before on the podcast specifically about my friend Laura, whose daughter had alopecia, and she put her on an autoimmune protocol and how hard that was because they had been just standard American before that. And then her hair has completely grown back in now. It's incredible. And she's able to maintain on just gluten-free and mostly dairy-free. And so I want to also just mention, like, as you're thinking about this, think of this the way that you would think about giving your child medicine. We're working mm-hmm. to heal our children's food. And this can be medicinal. While we are not medical professionals and not giving you medical advice, you know, the way that you nourish your body can be medicine, right? Isn't that some famous Hippocrates quote or something, mm-hmm. right? Now that I've said that, I'm like, Matt's going to jump in and tell me how very wrong I am about that quote and where it came from. But this has always been the way. And you are not to blame or to feel guilty because you weren't doing it before. Like, that does absolutely nobody any good. My mom raised us vegetarians because she thought that that was the best thing for us. And I hold no grudges over her for making a decision that she thought was the best. And then when you know better, you do better, right? Like, we don't eat that way anymore. I gave Cole soy milk because I knew he was dairy-free, and I thought that that was the best and healthy thing for him when he was a toddler. I know better now, but I can't go back in the past and change it, so there's no point in being guilty about it. And I would say the same thing about where you're starting with AIP, how difficult it is to do this with a child who doesn't fully understand. We get you, we feel you. But also know that it is not the end all be all. This is not forever. When I started with my kids, I asked them to do it for 14 sleeps and we counted down on a calendar. And because we saw such improvement in their health from asthma to eczema to different sort of things, I said, okay, we're going to continue this. And they were on board because they felt better. So there's different ways to approach it with kids, especially depending on their age and what it is you're trying to support with their health.
I think with kids too, I mean, AIP in general, I think how you transition needs to fit your personality and your needs. And so part of what, you know, I recommend when I'm talking to somebody who's sort of intimidated by the AIP is, like, you don't need to rip off the Band-Aid and go all in, especially if you are a person who tends to have a hard time affecting positive change that way. So think about how you've tackled New Year's resolutions in the past. Are you the person who's, my kids actually this morning at the breakfast table asked if we can celebrate national, like, give up on New Year's resolutions day on January 17th this year. And to which I did not even dignify such a question with an answer. However, I think that that is an excellent example. If you're a person who, by the end of January, the end of February, you know, that new gym membership is collecting dust, and if that's been your experience with change, you might be a person who the all-in, you know, from 0 to 100 miles an hour in 0.6 seconds might not be the best way to approach this. And be able to find that balance and sustainability that is so important for the lifelong journey. You might be a person who's better breaking it down into iterative steps. And the challenge with iterative steps is keeping your eye on the prize, right? So is making sure that, you know, sometimes for some people with autoimmune disease, tackling the AIP iteratively means that you're making the positive changes, but if there's still something, say on your, you know, fifth or sixth step, if there's still something in your diet that is triggering your autoimmune disease, you might not be experiencing the improvements that you were hoping. And so the idea is, you might need more patience if you're going to tackle it iteratively, but at the same time, it's not going to be as big of a shock to the system. And then the only sort of wrench that gets thrown in there is, like, how aggressive is your disease? How serious is it? Is it bad enough that, you might, you know, be incentivized to go cold turkey, even though you would normally tackle challenges more effectively with an iterative approach, right? So those are all the types of things that go into thinking about transition. And with kids, I generally think that iterative change works better. I know that I went cold turkey because that's what works for me. And my family transitioned slowly over 6 months, right? So we went gluten-free first, then we went dairy-free. And, you know, my youngest daughter had a health condition that didn't, that was triggered by both gluten and dairy. And so we didn't see that resolve until she was dairy-free months after going gluten-free. And we went soy-free around the same time. And then we started working on finding the new favorites, right? So that can be a really fun journey with a child. You know, trying new foods into a game. Stacy has shared on the podcast a million times about engaging her kids in the choices, right? Take them to the farmer's market or the grocery store. Obviously, that's a little challenging right now during a pandemic. But maybe it's like going through whatever shopping app you're using and perusing the produce department, right?
We just did that last night.
There you go. And that's something, Stacey, that I have, you know, I think you shared that on, you know, episode 4 or something of this podcast. And it was something that I really took to heart and implemented with my own kids. And be patient because, you know, taste buds take a while to change. You know, it takes a while to sort of become familiar with a flavor. And as much as we can sort of build positive association, that can really be helpful for kids when they're trying new foods. So, you know, work on finding those new favorites, work on trying the new recipes, and try as you're finding a replacement. You know, I remember part of our journey was finding a gluten-free waffle that my kids would eat for breakfast, and then having to find a grain-free version of it. And it was actually, that's how Stacy and I bonded, was the waffle recipe out of Eat Like a Dinosaur was the first paleo waffle recipe that I had tried that actually my kids ate. And I was like, okay, great. Here's this last bit of gluten-free grains that are in our household that we can now get rid of. Now, 9 years later, we do eat some gluten-free grains. You know, we've kind of come... we've come through a different circle because we've been able to also over that time really expand the variety of foods my kids are eating and introduce more nutrient-dense superfoods and all of those bits and pieces. And I think the other thing with kids is, I mean, just like with humans, just like with adults, that was a terrible, slip.
We're all human. That's what you meant. Just like adults, we're all human.
Just like adult humans, as opposed to child-sized humans, we don't want to get overly focused on the food, right? The food is just one pillar of the AIP, and the lifestyle is all of the remaining pillars, right? Like sleep is a pillar, stress management is a pillar, activity is a pillar, connection is a pillar. And so we want to make sure that we are looking at all of those things. And I think one of the things that always surprises me with my kids, you know, we've backed up their bedtime and we've always done this, so that they naturally wake up without an alarm early enough that it's easy for them to get ready for school. And, that makes them really, really strange in their peer group. So that they go to bed as early as they do. Right. So my 11-year-old goes to bed at 8 o'clock and my almost 14-year-old goes to bed at 8:45, and like their friends are going to bed at 10 or 11. Like it's just, they're unusual in their peer group that they actually get enough sleep every single night and that every night is the same. And I think, you know, with sleep being so critically important for hormone regulation, for stress management, for immune function, for even for gut health, for neurological health, right? Our brains detoxify while we're asleep. There's so many reasons why sleep is just so critical for health. I think that, I think that can even be, if that's not something that's dialed in, that can even be a first AIP step, right? A first step that actually has nothing to do with food is like, okay, let's look at sleep patterns and sleep habits and see what we can adjust here so that we're improving the quality of our sleep and getting enough sleep on a consistent schedule. And then with stress management, you know, it was one of our 2020 resolutions that we have kept going this whole time, which is to work on mindfulness as a family. And then making sure that kids are getting lots of activity. I know that's, challenging right now. It's been challenging for us with my kids doing virtual school during the pandemic. Activity is basically neighborhood walks with the dog when we can fit it into the schedule and playing in the backyard. But those things are also really important. And so making sure that the lifestyle stuff doesn't fall off the to-do list as we're overly focusing on making food changes. And you know, one of the things that Jen asked was like, do I need a functional medicine doctor in order to do this? I mean, they're a fantastic resource, but they're not a necessity. The AIP is designed to be nutrient sufficient, right? It's a Nutrafor diet. And the idea behind it is it removes more potentially inflammatory foods than a straightforward Nutrafor approach. But there's nothing that's being removed that with intention, right? Paying attention to the food choices, doing that chronometer activity that we already talked about with Ricky's question, that we can't achieve, I mean, with the AIP's focus on nutrient-dense foods, generally it's a way more nutritious diet than alternatives. And so we can, you know, I think it's always really important to keep our doctors in the loop, but no doctor is going to have an issue with you having a nutrient-focused diet. Like, oh, wait, you're going to eat all of the nutrients that you need from foods and eat a ton of vegetables? Great. That's just what the science shows is a healthy approach. The difference with the AIP is it's a little bit more, there's this additional focus on eliminating potential triggers, but then it's, we reintroduce them and we challenge them and we figure out that individual tolerance and what's optimal for us as individuals. So it's, you know, there are a lot of potential first steps, and this can be broken down into iterative steps. And I do, you know, with my kids, again, we took 6 months to transition, and really it was about 2 years before I would say their diets were something where I was really happy, where they were eating the kind of vegetable variety that I want, like what was my goal to get to, where they would eat organ meat without like making faces. Right. And it, at that part took a long time. Just transitioning to something that at the time we would have called paleo was about 6 months. And whether you are an adult human or a child human, an iterative approach is a valid approach.
Yeah, my kids are still not eating organ meat and not going to bed before 9, but that's okay because it is a journey and we are all doing the best that we can as we go forward. My kids also sleep in later.
So my kids are up at 6 a.m.
I know when Sarah visits, I'm like, oh, how are we going to handle this schedule? We're on very different schedules, but the important part is that they're getting sleep. And so if you do want to start with sleep, I would mention we have a melatonin show, which is awesome. And we did talk about kids with melatonin then. That has been incredibly helpful for my youngest, whose ADHD keeps his brain moving all the time. And it is so obvious to me when he does not get sleep for all the reasons that you mentioned and for, you know, how healthful it is. I'm glad you kind of focused on that because I think we oftentimes get caught up in food and there's so many other things that we can be doing to support health and things like, you know, being active and going outside, getting sunlight, getting good sleep. All of those things contribute to health and hormones as well. So while food is imperative, it is not the only thing, and you can make big changes, you know, in other areas of your life as well to see benefits. So that's a lot. And I know what Ricky and Jen were originally saying is, how can I make this simple? And I think the answer is you just make the best choices that you can as often as you can. And you don't live with guilt or stress and let that negatively affect you. So with that, I just want to thank both of them for submitting questions that I know many people have, because these are some of the very common ones that we get. And if you would like to submit a question, we would be happy to look it over as we plan for 2020 and get all of our, you know, outlines and all those topics together. We'd love to hear from you. And if you want to hear more from us, you can hop over to Patreon and become part of our Patreon fam and hear more on what we really thought about this show. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll be back again next week.
Do you love the Whole View podcast? We'd love for you to leave us a review wherever you listen and share a podcast with your friends and family.
And did you know that you can now get exclusive behind-the-scenes content on Patreon for less than the price of an almond milk matcha a month? Your Patreon membership supports us and gets you access to a monthly bonus episode.
But not for kids' ears, because our bonus content is explicit. You can find us as The Whole View on Patreon for our real, unfiltered thoughts on this week's episode.
Guten Morgen.
So that's my kids, and they go, what language is that? And I'm like, sehr Deutsch. I'm like, what?
That and wie spät ist es, which means what time is it? I say to the kids all the time. And yet every time they're like, what? I'm like, yeah. literally, I've told you this 800 times.
I'm like, wie viel Uhr ist es besser? And they're like, what? No, it's just, yeah.
Yeah. That's, you know, 6 years of German and that's all I remember.
My favorite German word, Kugelschreiber. Come on.
You've mentioned that before.
So good. It's the best German word because it's three letters in English and it's all the letters in German.